Hello and welcome. I'm Patrick, your host for this presentation in the Inland Mariners audio series. In this interview, I'm talking with Mike Reed, wheelsman on the Stuart J. Court, recorded in February 2021. Mike, you grew up in the North End. How did you end up getting out on the boats? Is that what you wanted to do, or was it just a matter of there's not a whole lot of work in Superior?
Actually, I started working as a longshoreman with my dad, my uncles, and my brother. And then one day I just decided to look into it of sailing because there was nothing really for me. I had injured my knee because I went to school at Boat Tech to be a machinist, and I didn't want to stand on my knee after I got hit by a car, hit and run. And then so I kind of drifted for a few years. And then I was working on a boat down at Connors Point when I got a call to if I wanted to go sail on the Great Lakes.
What year was this?
This would be in 1989.
Okay.
And I got a call to, I went and got my card and everything. And then I had to go to Taconite Harbor, which I had no clue where it was. I went by it like three times. And then when I finally found it with my parents, I went down to the dock. And there was two ships. There was the Lewis Wilson Foy and the Sparrows Point. And I ended up on the Sparrows Point.
How'd you get hired? Did you go through the Union Hall? How did you sign up and go through that whole rigmarole?
I signed up way back when they had the Union there, and I called them up, and I said, I went through the rigmarole of getting my Merchant Marine card and everything, and then I called them up and said I would like to go to work, and they wanted me to go to Fairport, Ohio, and I told them, I said, I have no idea where that's at, because like I said, I was very new to it, and they says, well, where do you live? I said, I live in Superior, Wisconsin. And they told me that, well, we don't get many ships up there. I said, okay, I understand that. And then that time, like I said, I was working as a longshoreman part-time with my father and my brother and my uncles and stuff. And then I was working at Meehan Shipping on Connors Point when I got a call to meet a ship at Taconite Harbor.
Not many boats loaded at Meehan's there, did they?
No. I mean, actually, it was food for peace. So, I mean, it was busy. Guys worked very hard there. And, I mean, it was good money. But I was looking for something more. And then when they called me, and like I said, I've never sailed on a ship. I had no clue what it was involving at all.
So you knew you were getting on the Sparrows Point?
No, actually, there was two ships. There was two Bethlehem ships there.
Right.
The Sparrows Point was behind the Lewis Wilson Foy, which was loading wet red ore, and I believe the Sparrows Point was unloading coal at the time, and I ended up on that ship for 58 days.
So what did you think when you got down to the, well, you had to find the place first. It's a little hard to find, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because the sign is probably 2 feet long by about 6 inches high, and it's got Taconite Harbor. And like I said, we drove by it like four times. And then finally we went down to the road, and I'm like, there's two boats. I'm like, oh, I didn't know what to do. So I'm walking with my bag, and the people on the Sparrows Point said, come on up. I says, I don't know what ship I'm supposed to be on. And they said, well, come on, we'll take you. And I went to work directly. I got on, put on my work clothes, and I started working.
What did you think? What was your first day like?
It was crazy because they had a stuffed pipe, and so they had, now, you got to remember, this is in 89, so they had a long ladder, probably 16-foot ladder, tied up over the side, and being new, they sent me over. No life jacket, no nothing, not tied on, no safety belt. Over the side I went, and I'm banging on this pipe, about a 5-inch pipe, to loosen all the iron ore and dirt and mud that was stuck from the deck down below so they could drain. And I almost fell off it twice. And finally, we got it loose, and they pulled me up. And I've never run a hatch crane, and they put me on the hatch crane and said, this is how we do it. And I loved it. I fell in love with it.
So you were in the cargo hold knocking the shit off of the sides of the slope.
No. This, I was hanging off of a ladder, and under about a foot into the, underneath the deck was a pipe. that led from the main deck down below the cargo hold, and it was full of iron ore and dirt and mud, and they were having me with a sledgehammer or a small ball peen hammer trying to knock it loose so we could break it loose so it would dry off into the cargo hold.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my first day on the job. I mean, like my first hour.
Boy, they didn't give you much of an introduction then.
No, there was none. Zero. Get dressed, come to work.
You really liked it then?
Yes, I fell in love with it because, like I said, I met so many different people and I was brand new and most of them were nice except for the bosun. He was kind of hardcore. And he was screaming and hollering at me, and I told him, hey, listen, I don't take this from anybody. I'm new. If I screw up, you can shoot me out, but don't belittle me and treat me like a dog because I'm brand new. And then we got along great. He treated me like a little brother, and we got along great, and they showed me how to run the hatch crane, which I never did by myself. And then in the 59 days I was on that ship, I never got off down below because everybody else had seniority, and that were their home ports and everything, in which I understood, and so I worked it. And then when we came up to Superior, which is about every fifth or sixth trip, I got off at the cement plant in Superior. When the first mate told me to get off, he said, get off. I said, what, am I fired? He said, no, you've never got off the boat. He said, meet us back up in Taconite Harbor tomorrow afternoon. So that was my first introduction of having time off on the ship.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Do you think being, you know, used to being around your dad as a longshoreman in the dock, you weren't intimidated by this bosun then?
No, because the guys on the longshoremen, plus being in the Marine Corps, there's not many comparisons to getting your butt chewed. I've had my butt chewed by the best.
I didn't know you were in the Marine Corps.
Yes, sir. 6 years, 71, 77.
I'll be damned.
Like I said, I've had bosuns chew me out and they go, what are you laughing about? I says, if you think you're trying to intimidate me, I says, you're not even close. I says, I've had my butt chewed by the best in the Marine Corps, so you're nothing, so don't even try.
So your first trip out of Tack Harbor, where did you go? Or did you wait and load then after the Foy left?
No, we left, and to be honest with you, I don't know where. We unloaded anywhere from Fairport, Ohio, which is a whole new ballgame. We've unloaded at, oh my gosh, I can't think of the place, just inside the river system. You come into a detour. We loaded across from Detour. We did Stone there, and then we used to unload down in Fairport. And once you get to Fairport, which is totally baffling, and that's when I was with the bosun, and they lower you down into a raft or a lifeboat, and you row yourself over to shore, and then now you're pulling a cable probably 150 feet, 200 feet, and you hook it up to the guy that's got the front end loader, and hopefully he's not gassed up because he used to be gassed up all the time because he'd run you over. And then that was my first introduction to Fairport, Ohio. You're in the middle of the bay or the river or stream or whatever, but you are in a lifeboat and you row over, and then you're taking the line, which is probably three lines long, which are 150 feet a piece, and you're pulling this, and then you're pulling the cable and you hook it up to the front end loader.
Those are pretty heavy cables, aren't they, to be pulling?
Yes, they're anywhere from 3/8 to an inch. You got to be strong.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of bulwark.
It is. When you, people come out for the first time, Patrick, they have no clue. They think it's all fun and games. And it's like, no, you've got to tie up the boat. You're going to go to work. When they call you to come out to work, you go to work. You're going to shovel. I mean, we had a spill in Taconite Harbor when I was on the Lewis Wilson Foy, which was my second ship in the Bethlehem fleet. And the first time I shoveled red ore, me, the ore and the shovel, well, I didn't. The shovel in the ore went into the cargo hold. It was like shoveling wet cement. It was one of the hardest jobs I ever had. I'm like, are you seriously kidding me? And this is what one of their main runs were.
So they really went Tack Harbor to Fairport.
No. That was on the Sparrows Point. You went everywhere where the big boys couldn't go.
Okay.
And then once we got on, like I said, when I got on my second ship, which was the Lewis Wilson Foy, it was anywhere from Taconite to Superior, to Burns Harbor. That was the main run for Bethlehem Steel.
Okay.
The Lewis Wilson Foy, the Burns Harbor, and the Court would go to Burns Harbor, Indiana. But the Court was the main run, and the Lewis Wilson Foy were the main run. The Burns Harbor would go there occasionally, and otherwise we would go anywhere from Ohio to Indiana Harbor to wherever. It was wherever they could get a run. But the main steel run was Lewis Wilson Foy and Stuart J. Court.
Okay. Okay. So you were on the Sparrows Point for, you said, about 58 days or so?
Yes. And then I got bumped off. I went home. And then I got on, and then I got called back, and I went on the Lewis Wilson Foy.
Okay. So had you gotten back to Superior on a ship by this point?
Yes. Matter of fact, I did, yeah.
What was that like, going into your hometown on a working ship?
It's strange. It's different because back then, in the heyday, well, the Foy and the Burns, they took anywhere from 8 to 12 hours to load. Once you tied up the ship and you brought on groceries, you had time to go up the street and do whatever you needed to do, but you had to be back because they'd call you out an hour before the ship left so you could scrape around the hatches and put the hatches back on when we got ready to leave and then let the wires go, then off we'd go.
Did you like sailing on the Sparrows Point?
I did, because time went by so fast, because you were constantly hitting ports and they would change orders in the middle of the night and you didn't know where you were going to end up. 58 days probably felt like 2.5 weeks, because like I said, Patrick, you didn't know where you were going. I mean, they would change orders continuously because they would go wherever they could get a load. It was fun. Great cook, and it was just time went by so fast.
How old were you at this point?
I started at a very old age. I started at 35.
Okay. Okay. Do you recall your first trip down through the Sioux Locks?
Yeah, all of them. I remember on the Burns Harbor, on the Foy, on the Court, and Sparrows Point. And, you know, you get over the side, you go, and they drop you down, and you get off, and hopefully you survive it. And once you tie up, you're back on it, and then groceries, and then down the river you go.
It got to be a routine then a little bit.
Yes, pretty much, yeah. You knew exactly when you left, it was anywhere from 24... I take that back, depending if you left taconite. So it'd be like 18 to 24 hours you knew you were going through the Sioux. You always hoped that was after 4:30 because then it was overtime.
Okay, so you worked like a regular 8-hour day, right, normally?
Yeah, a deckhand would work 8 to 4:30. And then if you were a watchman, there's three watches. There was 12 to 4, midnight to 4 in the morning, 4 to 8 in the morning, and 8 to 12. Same as the wheelsman.
Okay.
So you had watches, which was nice, which I gradually graduated. Once I made it, I went to school to get my ABs. Then I was the AB as a watchman for a while, and then I went up on my own time to learn how to wheel a ship. And then that's how I ended up on the Stuart J. Court for 28 years and ended up being a wheelsman before I finished my career.
You finished out your first year then on the Foy, right?
Yes.
And where did that lay up? That was in Milwaukee or?
The Foy? Where did we lay? No, actually, I think we laid up in Ohio because they sold it. The company got sold. No, wait. Let me regroup here, because the Foy. No, actually, I think, yeah, the Foy laid up in Ohio. And then, no, because I went on to Burns Harbor the following year. And then I think we laid up in 91, 92, before they got sold. Gosh, I can't think, Patrick. I'm getting old. I went from the Sparrows Point to the Foy, because when I was on the Foy, we were down in Ohio, and we were coming back up to the Blue River. We had to move over for two sailboats. Because I looked out the window, I said, guys, are we supposed to be that close? And the whole boat left the galley, and we almost hit the Blue Water Bridge, because it was like all you heard was scraping of the hull, scraping against the bottom of the lake. And that freaked me out. And then, because later on that year, then we were going up to a Superior, we hit a bad storm, and we had like 5 feet of ice from the bow probably the number 7 hatch. And then I think in 91, I was on the Burnt Harbor. 92, I ended up on the court. And I was on the court from the court 92 till my retirement here in March. For that, because I was on the court for about 28 years.
That was the only 3 ships they had, right? That Bethlehem 4. Had?
At my time, there was 4. There was 3,000 footers, Stuart J. Court, the Burns Harbor, Lewis Wilson Foy, and then they had the little guy.
That's
Barrows
right.
Point.
You didn't want to stay on the little one, or did you have a choice in what ship?
No choice. I had 0 seniority, so I went where they ever sent me.
Okay. So when they sold, then, you hadn't been sailing very long, what, 2 years or so?
Oh, no, sir. I had 12 and a half years.
Okay, I'm getting my time frame mixed up. So you went on to Burns Harbor.
I went from the Foy to the Burns Harbor to the Court.
Okay, so how did you like the Burns Harbor? That's a taller ship. It's got a little different layout than the other ones, if I recall.
On there, they put me, I started out in the engine room, and I hated it. I did not like it.
What did they have you doing, like as a wiper? Or?
Yep, all the grunt work, all the grunt work. It was not fun. I did not like it. I liked being on deck.
And you're still an OS at this point, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you didn't get a choice of working on deck then, or they put you where they had a space?
Yes, they put you where an opening was.
Okay, so how long did you stay in the engine room?
1 season.
Okay, so a whole season.
Yep.
Was there still that sort of rivalry between the deck crew and the engine crew?
Oh, big time. You know what? I don't care what anybody tells you. It goes on to this day. It's us against them, which is the stupidest, silliest thing in the world.
But I bet there's probably some funny shit that goes on with all that, too, though.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you a story, Patrick. I was on the court, and we had a first engineer that went chief. And I'm up in the pilot house wheeling, and we're watching him walk back aft. And one of the valves are open on the port side on a slant, on a court. And he sees it, walks down to the engine room, calls up to the pilot house and says, "Hey, one of your deckheads needs to come back here and close this valve." The captain happened to be up there at the time. He says, "Give me the phone." He says, "First, yeah, this is the old man." "Yes, sir. I just seen you walk back, and now you're calling up here. Get your butt upstairs, go close the valve. Now." "Yes, sir." End of story. That captain did not play games. He treated everybody the same, and he had 2 rules. Don't ever lie to me, and don't ever mess with my mates. And it was one of the best times of my life working for him and the first mate. And that was Captain Copens, Ed Copens, and Dennis Cotty as the first. They were 2 old-time sailors, and they were the best. They treated their crew like gold.
I've heard stories of Copens. He was a drinker, wasn't he? Went up the street a lot?
His rule was he didn't trust the sailors that didn't drink.
If you didn't drink, he didn't trust you.
Yep. But he was one of the best ship handlers I've ever seen in my life. And he treated his crew well. He did not know. You loved working for the man because he was fair. Him and Dennis Cotty is the first, and he would end up becoming our relief captain. 2 of the best people I ever sailed with my entire life.
So you were done with the engine room after the first year in the Burns Harbor. Did you go to the office and say, you know, you wanted to be on deck? Or
no, actually, they called me, and they ended up, they called me for the court. And I said, okay, I'll meet it down there in Burns Harbor. So I'm going to take a bus. And this is when Greyhound had a strike. The man couldn't find Cloquet. He had no clue where Cloquet was. So I ended up missing it, and I called up the relief, and I told him, I says, "This, I'm sorry." He says, "Well, there's nothing I can do." I said, "The bus, I just can't make it." I end up catching the ship in Superior. And like I said, that was in August of 92, and I've been on it ever since. I was on it from 1992 till 2021.
So come March, what are you going to do? Are you going to sail at all? Are you just going to turn in your papers?
I'm done. I'm retiring. 32 years is enough. I've had a great career. I've met great people. And no, I've had enough. I'm going to call it quits.
Okay.
Yep. I've witnessed some great storms. I've witnessed some great northern lights. I've witnessed some beautiful sunsets, sunrise, a little bit of everything. And I enjoyed it. I am thankful and grateful that I had a great job.
So what was the court like when you first got on her? That's certainly not like the normal 1,000-footers.
No, sir. And I got on there, it was so weird because how fast it loaded. This is back in the early 90s. Back then, they would load both sides of BN, number one, and they'd have everything loaded. And if both belts were working, and because of the pumps on the Stuart J. Court, all the 18 pumps were up on deck, which you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if they'd come in unloaded at like 1, they'd pump everything out. They'd come in, they'd barely make it underneath the rigs. And if he said everything's going, you would be out of there under 4 hours. I've never seen anything like that in my life when I got on that ship. Because we tied up, and they go, where are you going? I'm going up the street. No, you're not. You don't have time. Went up to my room. It's like, okay, they were calling us out to put hatches on and everything because we were leaving. 58,000 tons under 4 hours. It was bizarre.
But that was not the norm when I remember. BN was a really slow-loading dock, if I recall.
Well, like I said, in the 90s, they had Bob, Dennis, and Milt. And Bob, which is the senior man there, he would tell you it's a quick load. You didn't go anywhere. You got done with groceries. You went, sat down. You had a cup of coffee. You were going back out on the deck. 6-hour loads, very common. They just bombed it. And then they start changing later on in our career because you'd have other ships coming in there. So they would load one side with our ore and one side with somebody else, and then they'd bring it up. And if they had both belts working, like I said, 6-7 hours was probably the max. Yeah, it was crazy. Like I said, I've been on there when they had 3-hour and 15-minute loads, 3-hour and 20-minute loads. I'm like, I got off to go on vacation. No, actually, yeah, I was going on vacation. And I went up the street, and they were calling guys back. 3 hours and 22 minutes, loaded. And then what the nice thing was on the court, when you went back down below to the Burns Harbor, if you were anywhere within 8 hours, every other ship got held up. Because once you came in through the piers, the green light coming in and going out was 12 hours. We unloaded under 12 hours.
If I recall, Mike, the unloading rigs were the clamshells down there in Burns Harbor.
Yes, the big ones. Yeah, and I think until recently, until about 6 years ago, they had that big ice storm, and one of them got the switches froze, and it collapsed and crashed and burned and everything else, and then they put in a new one, and then everything just kind of fell apart. But yeah, the court would unload 12 hours or less, guaranteed. You were in and out of there within 12 hours.
Okay.
And Bob Larson, the senior man who lived down there, hated it because sometimes we'd be out there at 11. They'd unload anywhere from 6,500 ton an hour. They just bombed it.
Wow.
Not like the last few years, it's like 4,500, 2,500, 3,000. It's like, really? You're there for 18, 25 hours. It's like, it's nice if you live there, but otherwise it got boring.
Yeah.
It was just really slow. Lots changed, Patrick, over the years. It's just, I don't know if it's gotten bad. I think it's gotten worse from when I first started.
Yeah, it seems like it takes a lot longer for loading and unloading.
It does, because I guess up in Superior, basically what it boils down to is maintenance. Maintenance on Superior's end and Burns Harbor's end. Superior, yeah, okay, we got one reclaimer working, the other one's down. Oh, we're only going to bring up this much an hour. So you'd sit there, Patrick, we could get the first run in an hour and a half, and you could sit there for 8 hours waiting for the rest of the first run. Then it's like, oh, it'll be another 3-4 hours before we get the second in trip. You get down below, oh, we got to go to Stockhouse for $2,000 an hour for 4 or 5 hours, and then all of a sudden something break down. And then 2.5 days later, you're like, really? Are we still here? And like I say, the old days, you came in and out, 12 hours, boom.
Yeah.
It has changed so much. And a lot of it is lack of maintenance. They don't maintain nothing. James O'Carroll, he used to be our dock boss. He was an engineer with Bethlehem, and then he went work for them guys. And he would show them the books of us being in and out. And, well, how do you do that? He said, we unload it. These guys, with these new engineers on the dock, they would freak out if you were going to unload a 55, 6,000 ton. Oh, you can't do that. And he says, here's the books. Look at the unload. 10.5 hours, 11 hours, 11 and a half, continuously, year after year after year, load after load after load. I mean, you're coming in there for 48 unloads a year, and he shows them the books, and they're like, well, they can't do it. So you're unloading at 3,500 an hour. And you're unloading 6,000, and that's long ton, short ton. You're there for 18, 20 hours, minimum.
And that was a hopper at Burns Harbor, right?
Yep, it was a hopper. But the unloaders, they'd freak out. So they just cut the unload in half. So you were there for a day.
Doesn't that cost Bethlehem more money, though?
No, it's Mattel, but yeah. Yeah, you got to pay for that time sitting there. And then when you have downtime, you got to pay your hourly fee for sitting there. But I guess that's all in the books. I'm not sure exactly how that end works.
Right, right. So when did you start thinking that you were going to make a career out of this?
I would say probably within a couple of years, because I was making really, I mean, back then when I first started, overtime was pretty much unlimited. So, I mean, you were making bank. You'd get 25, 30 hours a week overtime. It was like, you know, you get a paycheck. You're like, whoa, this is mine?
I'm not the captain.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, whoa. I mean, yeah, it was a blast. It was a good, fun career. You know, you party. You know, you partied hard, you worked hard.
Right. Back then, the 90s, I know alcohol wasn't supposed to be on board, but it was still pretty loose from what I understand from talking with a lot of people.
Well, all I know is we used to call it the blue light special, because we were getting into Superior around midnight. You tie up the boat, you ran up for the last call, and down below, you would end up down there at the same time. It was because no matter if we had a quick load, we had a 4-hour load or 8-hour load, it was like the weather or something. We were on a blue light special run for like 8 trips, 9 trips, and people were going crazy. And the first time we finally got someplace to where we could enjoy ourselves, everybody bought cases of beer. And on my deck, we had a refrigerator. There was probably 2 cases of beer in the fridge, probably 2-3 cases in the closet. And I think that was the whole deck, because everybody just went crazy. They wanted their beer. And it was definitely looser back then. You could drink. I mean, we'd go to work, we'd go paint the deck, break time, go have a couple beers, go back out there, have the big old boombox playing, and we just worked. It was fun times. It was relaxing. Nobody cared. And just, you know what? Nobody bugged you. If you worked, you were golden. We worked hard, but we got rewarded for it too.
Sure. Where would you go up the street in Superior? The old town?
Depending on the time. Mostly with Smitty's and President's.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's a lot closer. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, that was a walk up. It took you like 10, 15 minutes. And then the bar from Smitty's down, heading north a block away. I can't think of it. It used to be across the street from the old Waletzko's.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of that either.
But you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
And then some people would go into Waletzko's, you know, depending on the time. But that was the 4 places most people went to. Unless you had a lot of time, then people would run up the street, you know, haircuts, supplies.
Mm-hmm. So how long did you stay in OS, and when did you decide to get your AB tickets?
I think it was about 2.5 years I went and got my ABs. And the old man told me, he says, there's no way you're going to pass. And I said, well, what are you going to give me if I do? And that was Ed Copens. So I went to school, passed. And it was funny because when I went to school, Mr. Tanner used to be a mate with Bethlehem, and he quit. He ended up becoming the commandant of the school. in Traverse City, and I passed. I went back, and the old man handed me one of his big old stogies, and I took about 3 hours to smoke that thing down there in Burns Harbor, Indiana. It was up the street. Best cigar I ever had in my life. Because he didn't think I could pass. He says, no way. I said, oh, well, here you go.
What kind of things did you need to know to ace that?
Rules of road, basic knowledge. Gosh, that's really tough because, you know, that's 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Just a blink of the eye.
Yeah, dude, I'm old.
I hear you.
It's just everybody was stuck together. You know, you had to learn how to row a boat and all the commands. I can't remember them to save my life right now because it's like they fill you up with so much to take the test. And then once you're done with it, it's like letting the air out of a balloon.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. Because you don't retain 90% of it. And they'll tell you that because 90% of it you don't use. A lot of it's just common sense.
Sure.
Helping your sailor, helping your buddy, helping your roommate. I mean, it was just, you know, here, let me help you with that. Let me help you with this. And that's just the way it worked. But I mean, you know, the Navy's, and then like for me, learning how to wheel, I went up on my own time. Back then, you put in your own time. They just didn't hand you the wheeling job because I had no clue, especially on the court, because that was a beast. You know, some people put on 10 degrees and they're like, well, how come it ain't turning? It's like, dude, you got like almost 100,000 tons. You got to hard over it to get it started. And then it just, they'd give me stretches where it was 2-3 miles of just keeping holding a line. And eventually they let me up into the river and I'd get little pieces of the river. And I'm telling you what, you couldn't put a cat hair up my butt. I was so nervous and so tense. It was like, are you kidding me? This is intense. But I worked on it, and I finally got a relief job up in the pilot house. And then once I got up there for a full-time job, I was like, nope, ain't going back on deck for nothing.
So there's a lot of nuances to learning how to steer then, aren't there?
Yes, yes. Because like I say, once you get up there, you have to, when they tell you we're going to leave port, you pull up the ladder, you go upstairs, you turn on the system, you go turn on the radars, you go turn on the steering, you check the pumps, you check the steering, you check the NFU. It's different. And then, like I say, once you come out, once you're in hands, you're trying to hold 100,000 tons in a straight line.
I would thought that would be fairly easy.
No. If you've got wind, waves, holding a straight line is not fun. And then, okay, if you're going full speed, yeah, it's so much easier to steer. But also now, they take your engines from 105 RPMs down to 55. They cut your steering down to a third of that. Now you're basically spinning your wheel because that's what it feels like. You have nothing. Your control is slim to none. But you have to let the captain know, especially like if you're coming into the locks, because he is trying to bring the ship up against the lock, and your power is cut from full speed down to about a fourth. And you have to let him know so he can hit the thrusters to help you steer, because you cannot keep a straight line. It's impossible. Impossible. And then if you've got wind, wave, and everything else, there is many, many nuances going on in this when you're steering that puppy. On a great day, it's a piece of cake. Otherwise, not so much fun. Because if you're in a storm and you're trying to bring it left, and that wind and them waves are pushing you, and the old man's got the thrusters on and he's trying to bring it up against, and you've got it hard over left, and you're basically at the mercy of the captain, which you're praying is a really good captain, and the thrusters, because if he loses thrusters, you're pretty much, you got nothing. These captains, they are some of the best in the world on these Great Lakes. I've been amazed at what they can do with these ships. Copins, he's not so young, but Paul Berger. Paul Berger is one of the best young captains I've ever seen. Jean-Francois Pennington, excellent captain. I mean, these guys, Francois is a little older because he came from the Canadian side, so he had to retest for everything. That man, first time I ever seen him on the Stuart J. Court, he took the wheel, and it was like nothing. It's like he'd been doing it his entire life. Miss Bobby Thibodeau is very good. Dave Johnson. These are guys that I've worked with. There's a lot of other captains that I haven't seen. But Paul Berger, Thibodeau. But Paul Berger is awesome. Captain's captain. Very good. Bobby Thibodeau is one of the better ones I've seen in my life because I've never went through the Duluth Piers in my life. And I was on the court. And he explained to me what we were doing, what was going to happen, and everything happened exactly the way he said. And that is a treat, going in there 7-8 miles an hour in heavy winds. It's hilarious when we do come through there because here you go, ladies and gentlemen, you're seeing something that you normally don't see at all. A Sturgeon Court, first 1,000-footer, blah, 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 and all these people come running out of the woodwork to see us coming through.
Yeah, I always seem to notice when people go, oh, the court's going through, or Duluth entry, that, oh, okay, well. That's unusual.
Yeah, usually it's repairs. Going over to the terminal for something to get fixed.
Now, I heard last fall that you guys chased some ice fishermen off the Superior Channel down by Barker's Island. Were you on there?
No, I wasn't there.
Okay. I heard some guys were out ice fishing in the channel and the court was coming down to the BN dock. And
yeah, that's true. I've heard that. Yeah, I heard that from a couple of the guys. No, I was home. That's one of the benefits of being a senior man. You take them vacations. Because I've been there where, yeah, when I first started out on that place, on the court, and we go into Superior, took us 3.5 hours to tie up. My right eyeball was frozen, and that's when remember the old yellow boots?
Yeah.
That they used? Yeah, well, I had my work boots inside them, and when I went into the shed over there, and I pulled them off, and my boots were white. It was so cold. My right eyeball was frozen shut. Once we finally tied up and got groceries and everything, I went into the shower. I cried. I thought I was going to die. I have never been that cold in my life. I've lived in Superior my entire life. I've never been that cold.
What was the air temp?
Probably about 35 below with the wind chill. Yeah. And it took the old man about 3.5 hours to tie up. It was bad. Because you had the wind coming through and the sleet and everything through the in between the docks. And like I said, you're trying to see. No, it was, like I said, I had some of the best boots on in my entire life. When I pulled them out of them yellow boots, my boots were frosted white. I have never been that cold. And like I said, I've lived in Superior my entire life.
So let's go back to your wheeling. How long did it take you to start out? Did you go to the captain or how did you approach them about wanting to wheel?
I asked the captain. I said, I would like to try this. He says, all right. And it was funny when I come up because we had just left Superior. And he says, all right, take the wheel. What? Take the wheel. Hard over. Because you repeat it. And he says, all right, back to regular course. I said, I don't know what the regular course is. He says, that's what you need to know. And I'm like, he goes, come on back. But he was really, really good. He would explain things to you and he would teach. If you were willing to learn a mate, anybody, he would teach you. Ed Copens, without a doubt, was the best captain I've ever seen in my entire life. Great ship handler. Great captain. Treated his crew well. Took care of his crew. He didn't play. And like I said, it took me probably 2 or 3 months on my own going up there, up and down the river to learn and the lake, and because you had to put your own time in. Then finally, I got one of the guys went. He says, do you want to try it? And I says, yes, sir. And I tried it. And coming into Burns Harbor, I screwed up. Because I remember I told you how they drop it back down to like 3-4 miles an hour. And They're barely thrusting. The engines are like 55% pitch. And I hardened it over. And he goes, you're going to take the wheel off? And my face got so red. And I took it off, and then he put the thrusters on, and he helped me get through. And he says, I don't think you'll make it. Well, I kept practicing, and I was a wheelsman for about 20 years.
How long did it take you to learn how to anticipate when to turn in the rivers and...
You, Patrick, I've been doing it for about 20 years. You still learn.
Really?
Yes, because you don't... Sometimes you go down the river, and it's 85,000 feet per second. Next week you come down there, it's 120 feet a second. You just never know. You're on your toes the entire time. Once you hit the system, until you get through Rock Cut, which is probably your biggest one, it's a continuous struggle because the wind, snow, rain, fog, mist. I've gone through rock cut numerous times. And like I said, there's sometimes on a dime, man, it's like on rollerblades. And the next time it's like, what the? He'll tell you, well, it's 120,000. We just kicked it up to 120,000 feet. So that's 40,000 more gallons a second coming at you. And you're trying to figure that out.
Do you lose steerage way when you when the water speed changes like that?
It's harder. You're going to use more wheel. They're going to use more engine. They're going to up the RPMs. And you got your thrusters, obviously, because you don't want to use them. But and then it falls on the mate, because the mate, if you got a good mate, he's already figuring that out. And then my time, as I got better and better and better, I'd anticipate it. And we would work together as a team, which you have to do. And if you can keep the captain in the chair, life is good. If he comes out of the chair, life's not so good. And it's just, like I said, it's tough, because if you start that turn too soon, you have a chance of running into the wall. If you start too late, you can get grounded.
Have you ever run aground?
Nope. Nope. Been anchored a few times because of storms.
Well, I know sometimes, you know, they put them on the ground. I know they've done that down by Rock Cut.
We'll go anchor there, but I mean, that's because you're waiting for a dock or a storm's coming or something. But normally, I mean, in the last few years, 10, 15 years, the water level's been so high, so you don't have that delay, you know, because they'll tell you it's 25, 30 feet to where we've been through there where I've heard the bottom scrape. You know, you hit a rock, it's like, what? That's because you got the low water temps, but water's been so high in recent years. So, I mean, that's why everybody's loading deeper, and it's made it that much easier. People on shore don't care for it, but I mean, you know, you're out there to make money.
Right. Yeah, it's been good. So,
yeah.
So you got your AB ticket, and then did you get a full-time wheeling job, or were you still working on the deck at that point?
I was deck.
Okay.
I was on the deck, and then I got an AB job, then I got a watchman job.
Working on the court, I mean, a lot of people say, well, it's a pretty easy job because you got hydraulic hatches, and is it different than the other ones?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first time I was on the court, I opened up all 18 hatches, and the bosun jumped my butt. I'm like, what? I mean, these are hydraulic, man. I'm not doing clamps, like 100 clamps per hatch? Yeah, so, I mean, it's like, duh. He said, no, we each open up four. I'm like, yeah, right. And I laughed at him. He said, no, that's what we do. So it's like, no. I mean, I got on the court, I thought I was, like, died and gone to heaven. I said, this is easy. You know, you leave, you hose the deck, you go down. And when we're leaving Burns, you go down to the tunnel, you do the wheel and everything. It's like, all right, this is it. No, I loved it. I would not change it for the world.
They have a rather unique unloading system on the court, right, yeah. With the big wheel, and that's a bitch to get down through that walkway, if I recall.
I banged my head numerous times, and once you get back into the after house and you get down by the unloading system and the wheel, there's a pipe there on the port side just past the escape hatch, the airtight door, and I mean, if you're hosing, and if you come up, and I come up early, and I dung my dogging on that thing a couple of times, almost knocked myself out. But the court is really different from any other ship, because when you unload, the mates unload instead of the deckhands. And they can open up every gate on that ship at one time. So where other ones, you got to open up cargo hold by cargo hold by cargo hold by gate by gate by gate. Them guys can open up all gates at one time. And that's what makes it unique, because the pumps are on deck, so they're pumping out as they're putting in new water and as they're unloading. It's a totally different beast, Stuart J. Court.
And the unloading they do from that booth in the back on deck, correct?
Yep, above the number one.
Why haven't other ships adapted that type of an unloading system?
That is very, I don't know. Because like I said, I mean, obviously our belt is short, so you can only... They designed it specifically for Burns Harbor, and they were going to build two more. But they said the cost of building the court was astronomical. So I guess they went to court and they settled, from what I've been told. But at one time, they wanted three courts for Burns Harbor, Bethlehem Steel, and Bethlehem Steel only. but that didn't work out. Yeah, because otherwise you go on the other boats, you're there for hours. I mean, even on a good day, the Burns Harbor, it'd take 18, 20 hours to unload. We'd be out of there, like I said, in 11 hours.
You were on there then when Bethlehem sold the ship, correct?
Yes, I was.
Can you tell me a little bit about how that all went down and how that impacted crew and yourself?
Well, actually, when I found out about it, I didn't have enough time to do anything, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of had to go with the flow because ASC, I think, came in and they were offering people jobs. I just went with wherever they sent me, and I happened to, when they sold it, we went down to Lorain, Ohio, if I'm not mistaken. We tied it up, and they says, okay, you're going on to court. So I went from there to the court. I was kind of like forced over there because I didn't have a choice to go anywhere else because I didn't have enough time or seniority, which would end up being a blessing for me. So to the court,
I'm sorry, you were on the Burns Harbor then?
Yep.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No. Was I in the Burns or was I in the Foy? I'm not sure. I was on either the Foy or the Burns. And when we tied up in Lorain, and then I got sent over there, and then some other people went steamship, and other went to, what's that other company that laid up?
Cliffs?
No. Keep going.
ASC, Interlake, U.S. Steel.
Nope.
Inland?
The other one.
Inland?
Nope. The bigger one that had, because most of the guys went from
Columbia.
No, not Columbia.
No?
Keep going. No,
huh.
They, this is crazy. We should both know it. A lot of the guys went from Sparrows Point and everything. They went over to Integrity. Now, what the hell is the name of the company? Because they ended up going belly up about 10 years later. Almost everybody from Bethlehem went over to that company. You know what I'm talking about. It's a big company.
Yeah, but wasn't that part of ASC?
No. Not, they didn't become ASC right away. Later. I'm sorry, Patrick, I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, I'm not.
You're going to laugh once you see it.
Ogilvy Norton?
Yes. Thank you.
Yes, Ogilvy Norton, that's it. Jesus.
Like I said, I told you, it's like, really? You can't think of the name of it?
Another company gone.
Yes. And that, I think that's where the Sparrows Point and all them went over there. They got sold to them guys.
Yeah, because I remember passing the Buckeye, meeting them in a river, coming down to St. Mary's River, and they were all putting a primer on and repainting the name on it.
Yep, that was a fun boat. So what else you got for me there, buddy?
Well, let's get back again to that union change. So you weren't really impacted by that, but a lot of guys seemed to have lost their shirt on that, didn't they?
Yep. Guys with seniority had a choice to go, and that's where a lot of them went. They stayed on the same boat, kind of like a red shirt. And they stayed on the Sparrows, and they stayed on the Foy, and I think the Burns, once they got all sucked over to the Ogilvy Norton.
There was a lot of controversy, wasn't there? You had to go through a different gate at BN and some of the different docks, if I recall?
Yep. Yeah, it was crazy.
And why was that? Were there people picketing the ship?
Yes. Like when they finally sold them, because the engineers got screwed over. And then that started another whole ball game. And it's like, I got to work. I didn't have a choice. You guys can sit there. You guys got jobs for big bucks. I don't. I got to go to work.
Right.
So, and that's when, we got bought out, we got sold. And that's when Interlake kind of like took over the court as a lease. They were going to run it for us. And that's when a lot of the engineers decided they pulled all the boats and says, this is what we're going to do. And it's like, well, I mean, I got no choice. Sorry, I got to go to work. I got to cross the picket line.
There was that engineer, the chief, that I remember running into afterward. He was working as a relief third on the Sykes.
John Girard.
Yes.
He passed away.
Oh, did he?
Yes, he had a massive heart attack about 7-8 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Now, you were on the court when that fellow was killed in the accident off the Apostles, right?
Which one?
He got crushed in the wheel.
Oh, I was there on the boat.
What was that experience like?
I got woke out of a dead sleep. And what happened was Triplex Bob and his crew were working. They were doing a repair back there, and our guys were down in the tunnel. And I guess miscommunication, and they started up the belt. And Adam Plath grabbed Denton by the hand and tried to pull him out. He said no. And that's the wheel turned, and he got sucked into the wheel. Yeah, I was there for that.
What was his name, the guy who was killed?
Denton Haskey.
That's it.
Yeah, it was sad. Very, very, very sad. It should have never happened. Like I said, you get guys off the shore coming out there. And back then, you know, you've been on the court. It's loud back there. You're down in the tunnel. Bells, whistles, it don't mean nothing to you because it's all loud back there, especially when you're way in the back and you're cleaning. I woke up and I went running back there and we were trying to find him. And finally we got him from underneath the belt and pulled him out. And he looked perfectly fine, except when you went to give him, try to resuscitate him, it was just, you're doing presses, and his whole body was crushed. And I mean, that man was built like a brick shit house. He was solid. And it just, to this day, I still think about it.
And there was that other fellow who jumped off near the Manitou Island, wasn't there, that went over?
Oh, that was between Big Sabo and Little Sabo. I had just got off the boat and went home. And the next day, they were going heading back up the lake and over the side he went.
That's some crazy shit.
Yeah, well, and then we had Carl Stamm. He was going over the side in Burns Harbor. He had a massive heart attack. He was on the swing and dropped into the lake. And then early in my career, I lost the bosun, Paul Robinson. He had a massive heart attack, and I found him on a deck towards the back end of the ship on the starboard side, leading up towards the stairs going to back aft. He was going to secure the anchor. He had a massive heart attack. I found him on the deck. That's fun.
Do ships get a reputation for superstitions or?
I don't know. You know, Patrick, it's so hard because like I said, Carl Stamm, he lived on pop and sugar. He was a sugar freak. And what I thought he was going to have a heart explode going over the side, no. Paul Robinson, no. Denton, no. Accidents. You know, it's just freak of nature, I guess. And that young kid that jumped over the side, like I said, I got off the boat down in Burns. And I was home when a friend of mine texted me and told me that. And I was like, I couldn't believe it.
We haven't talked about storms. I've tried to avoid storms. Everyone wants to know big storms and all of that shit. So you must have some storm stories.
Oh, yeah. My best one was probably 94. You were probably still in Superior. I think it was 94. We were hiding behind the Keweenaw Peninsula. And when I went up to the pilot house to relieve, winds were clocked at 88 miles an hour. And the waves were 27 feet out on the lake. And in Chisquaw Bay there, where I was, the waves were getting cut off. That was the best one I ever been in.
Do you like storms?
Yeah, I remember one summer we were heading downbound and we were probably off by, probably down by Silver Bay or something. It was a nice summer day and freak wave. Me and my deckhand buddy, Danny, we were a wave hit port side. And it probably was about 6 feet above the deck. And it rolled down the deck towards me. And I was yelling at Danny, "Doc, doc, doc." And I said, "Grab." And so he grabbed onto the pipe. And my feet were frozen. I couldn't move. And I'm watching this wall of water about 6 feet coming at me. I was like, "You've got to be kidding me." I mean, it was a beautiful summer day. And then there was another time earlier in the year. Another friend of mine, we were walking up the starboard side, and the waves were following us, and they probably went up 8 feet over the deck. I mean, they didn't come on the deck, but, you know, alongside of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at my buddy, and I says, "I think we've got to start moving a little bit faster." And then another wave come up, and you've seen the pumps. They were about 4 feet above the pump.
Wow, that's pretty high up.
We just busted into a full burst trying to get up into the front of the house. Because I realized, like, what? But my best storm probably was, I think it was, you remember, I think it was 94. Because that's when it went crazy at the Duluth and Superior Harbor. We were hiding behind the Keweenaw. They had winds clocked at 88 miles an hour. And a couple of the buoys, whatever they got out there, they had them up to 27 feet high.
You don't get seasick?
No, I've never been seasick. I guess I'm fortunate. I mean, I still walk funny to this day after 30-some years on the deck. You get a tilt to you.
Head down into the wind, leaning to the...
it is. The wife's like, gosh, you're walking funny. I'm like, honey, I was out of ship for 32 years. But yeah, I've seen some good storms. I've seen some beautiful, beautiful northern lights on Lake Superior because it's so black. And that was probably early 90s. We woke everybody up on the ship. Everybody. I was relieving on in the wheelhouse. And we had northern lights from about 25 degrees off the port all the way around to the starboard side for 45 minutes. Yellow, blue, green, orange, yellow. And they just danced for like 45 minutes. And of course, you don't have the phones and the stuff that you have today. It was one of the best northern lights I've ever seen in my entire life. I was blessed to see that. Patrick, you would have went absolutely nuts if you would have seen this. Now, I'm not talking just a little bit of glow. I'm talking, it was like red, yellow, blue, orange, green, that stacked high. And it just come across the whole lake all the way over to the starboard side, from the port side all the way around to the starboard corner. And it lasted, like I said, for about 45 minutes. I had never seen anything like that in my life. It would have been a blast to have you on it, because you would have been like, are you seriously kidding me? This is what you see up in northern Alaska or whatever. That's what we got. It was phenomenal.
Did you have favorite places on the lakes you would like to go?
Yeah, there was a few places. Like I said, I was down in Lorain, Ohio, and I was on the Foy. I had never been there, and the guy took me to this Montanaro Club. It was $1 to join the membership for a year. I had never had Rolling Rock beer. And then from there, we went over to the strip place, and I was with the captain and the mate, and the horn's blowing, and I'm late. But, you know, normally my best time was Superior, because I grew up there and I knew everybody.
Right.
Some, like Gary, Indiana, you stayed out of. I mean, there was places black people didn't even go. Gary was scary. Very scary place.
I just drove through there this summer.
Yeah, white folk don't belong there. It's got its reputation. Parts of Chicago, Detroit, Milwaukee. You know, there's certain places you don't go.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of all the heavy industry? You're growing up in Superior, you see the one side of it, but... You get down to all those steel mills, that's a whole different world than from where we grew up.
Yes, and I was blessed after 20-some-odd crazy years, almost before I retired, I got a chance to take a tour of the steel mill down in Burns Harbor.
Really?
Yes, it looked like the apocalypse. You know, you think you're going to see all this fancy, clean industry and machinery and everything? Oh, no. It's crazy. And watching steel come out, how it's made into a slab, and then how it goes from about an 8-inch slab to a quarter of an inch. I have that. I've got it on my phone.
Wow.
It is, Patrick, you see it for the first time. You watch this 60-foot by 20-foot slab of red, hot, molten steel come underneath you, and then you get up to go watch it get squished. Until it's a big old spool. It's phenomenal.
Did things change when ArcelorMittal bought the steel mill from Bethlehem?
Yeah, I do. I think it went downhill. I don't think they put any money in. They quit maintenance. They quit everything. It was not the same. Not at all. Like I said, we used to go from 12-hour unloads to 18, 20, 22, 24, day and a half, 2 days. Constantly breaking down because everybody quit maintenance, which was sad. It's probably going to get worse.
Now, they don't own it anymore, do they? Didn't it get sold again to Cliffs? Or?
I believe so. I guess that was in the last few months, 4 or 5 months.
Which makes you wonder whether Cliffs will run the inland boats. Those were ArcelorMittal owned those. I don't know whether the Sykes and the Block are going to go to Cliffs now or what's going to happen.
I don't know. Yeah, good question. Because now what happens? And then I believe Cliffs owns, don't they own part of the Iron Range?
They do. Yeah, they're in there with United Taconite, with U.S. Steel, and I believe, well, they own Silver Bay, right?
Right. So that's going to be interesting.
And there's some big new place they're building in Toledo. I don't know what that is, like a nugget plant or some processing place.
Yeah, what is it, the Super Nugget or Super Pellet or something? Who knows? Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
What are you going to miss the most when you retire?
My friends, the camaraderie. Because like I said, I've been blessed with great captains, great mates, great deckhands, great cooks. Yeah, I'm going to miss them guys. But then I get along with anybody.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of its attitude, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, if you got an attitude, you're going to get it stuffed. You know, Mr. Know-it-all, it's like, okay, welcome to sailing. You got to keep an open mind because, you know, one of my first mate, I love him, Dennis Cotty. He'll tell you, you know what? If you're not learning something new out here every day, it's time to quit. And, you know, after he retired, and it's true, you learn something new every day out there sailing. There's always something that you can make it better, to fix something, to make this work better. Because like I say, like wheeling, there's always something you can anticipate or try to anticipate. You're always thinking 2-3 steps ahead because it's just, you never know what the ship's going to do.
So you plan to retire last fall? You're not going to go back out and have a farewell?
No. There's nobody there. All my friends are gone. All my old-time buddies are gone. I'm the last one of Bethlehem, basically. So I'm the last one of the Bethlehem Steel boys saying goodbye. I remember when I was on the bottom of the list, I was like 114. I'm serious. That was back in 89. I think it was 114, 116. That's when we had 4 ships, and it was like, now I'm number one. Yeah, it's not the same anymore, Patrick. It's become a job out there now, and that's not fun. It was so fun when it wasn't a job, when it was just, let's enjoy. Work, party, do it again tomorrow.
So no long farewells to...
No. I'll post a picture maybe in April. I got a picture of me, the number one behind me, saying farewell. It's been a blast.
Life's good.
Yeah.
Any parting thoughts? I should let you go. It's
no, I'm good. I thank you for the opportunity to tell you whatever you wanted to hear.
Thank you very much, Michael. It's been a pleasure. And
thank you, sir. You take good care of yourself.
Yeah, congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you very much.
This concludes this Inland Mariner's audio interview. Thank you for listening. This audio program has been presented by the Inland Mariner's Cypress Pictures LLC and Patrick Lipinski. To hear more, go to inlandmariners.com.